One of modern rock's biggest bands are back.
Hey, this is Nathan from Kings of Leon.
Kings of Leon.
Kings of Leon's eighth studio record, When You See Yourself, is out now. For an in-depth look at the album with the band, here's Triple M's Brendan Anakin.
Hey, it's Brendo, and while the Follow-Will family name may not be immediately recognisable, there's absolutely no way in this world you've never heard of their band. Comprised of brothers Caleb, Nathan and Jared, along with cousin Matthew, Kings of Leon have been churning out southern-tinged arena rock since the late 90s. Becoming a household name in Australia off the back of their 10 times platinum selling Only by the Night record in 2008, the band are back with their eighth studio album, When You See Yourself, which is out now. To learn more about it, Kings of Leon's frontman, Caleb, joins me. How you doing, man?
What's going on, buddy?
How's your life, man? You well?
Yeah, man. Just happy to be talking to you.
Oh, wonderful, man. Congrats on the new record. I've listened through quite a few times now. Immediately, there's this darker, sort of moodier tone, not felt as quite on your previous records. Was that an intention with this one?
Yeah, I wanted to depress the shit out of people. No, I'm just playing. I don't know that it was intentionally darker or anything. I kind of wanted to really dig back into my songwriting roots and tell stories and pull myself out of the picture as much as I could. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's always me in the song. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe there's a darkness to it. I'm not sure.
I only say that because, you know, I'm in love with the album's opener, When You See Yourself, Are You Far Away? It perfectly sets the tone for the record because it starts off a little bit, you know, tenebrous and shadowy, and then it sort of goes into this groove that you might hear on Come Around Sundown, but then, you know, there's this wistful longing and yearning. I just think it's a really interesting sort of direction the band's heading on their eighth studio record.
Thank you. Yeah, we loved it. That song was a fun one to kind of piece together because we, you know, that intro, the instrumentation on it, it feels like, to me, it feels like a sporting event a little bit. You know, it's kind of like pumping up and something big's about to happen. And, you know, that's what we tried to do. We tried to start it off with anticipation and people on the edge of their seat and then take it from there. So, yeah. That was a fun song for sure.
That song just perfectly encapsulates the tone of the entire record. Did it come about early in the process of making it?
That was a Jared bass line, and it was one of those that, you know, I didn't have my shit together completely from the word go, but it was one of those things that I kept telling him. I was like, don't forget that. Don't forget that. Like, put a mark on that one because that's going to be a big boy. That's going to be something that we have fun with. And it was probably closer to the end of the record before I actually finally wrote the lyric. I had a lot of love for that melody. It kind of gave me a little bit of a Talking Heads vibe. And, you know, I was like, yeah, we can make this more than just a song. It can kind of, you know, it can become kind of cinematic and set the thing up really well. So that was actually, it was there from the beginning, but it didn't get completed till the end.
We've been spinning the Bandit very heavily. What's the story behind that one? I assume it's a metaphor. Perhaps I don't think you're actually trying to catch a criminal.
I am. Someone's been stealing my damn cookies at night in the house, and I think it's my daughter. That song was so immediate. It was like as soon as we started playing it, it kind of started to write itself. And you know, I tried to take on some of my favorite songwriters like Townsend Zant and Blaze Foley. And, you know, there's a little bit of a Poncho and Lefty reference there, a little nod to that. But, you know, in the process of writing the lyric, I was like, you know, these two people are so monumental in one another's life, the one that's chasing, the one that's being chased. And my romanticized mind of it, I feel like they were never actually wanting to catch or be caught. It was just, that was their life, was the chase. And they never wanted the chase to end. So in a way, they're kind of, you know, they kind of love one another and they kind of need one another to give their life some sort of a purpose.
I just wanted to go back and touch on one of your biggest records, especially out here, went 10 times platinum, Only by the Night. What is it about that record that connected with so many people, not just here, but around the world, do you think?
I think a lot of it had to do with, besides the fact that we had a couple of singles that were ended up being monsters on the radio, I think up until that point, we had had a lot of people that were rooting for us. And I feel like we finally gave the world songs that would be played on the radio to where people could finally come together and be like, yes, they finally did it, you know? We've always had the best fan base all over the world. And like I say, I feel like people were so lucky. I feel like people have been rooting for us from day one. You're always going to have your haters and people that aren't rooting for you. And a lot of those people are the ones that started to kind of hate us after we did find success. But I mean, it all goes back to our fans. You know, we make music, and if people are into it, you know, that allows us to keep making music.
That's it. And one of those monster singles, of course, was Sex on Fire. I read, and I wanted to get this from the horse's mouth, I read that initially you weren't the biggest fan of that song, or you just thought it was a bit of a throwaway. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. Every song you've ever heard of ours on the radio was a song that I didn't want on the album. And I think it's because I secretly knew that there was something special about it. And, you know, I'm the anti-frontman, you know, I'm the guy that would kind of rather be in the background, and I'm a little shy, and it's hard for me to kind of assume that role. But Sex on Fire, I thought the lyric was funny, and I was like, hey, you know, we'd written a lot of funny songs. You know, Joe's Head was a blatant murder song, and you know, we had all these songs throughout our career. And so to me, that was the funny song on this album. And when people started taking notice to it and saying it was a hit, I was like, oh, shit. I didn't realize that my comedy was going to come back and bite me on the ass. But I'm super proud of it now. You know, I think without that song, we might not be talking right now, you know?
Let's touch on the lyrics you've written for the album. There seems to be this real longing and yearning in your words throughout much of the record. Is that fair to say?
You know, it depends. It's from day to day with me with lyrics. Some days I wake up and I'm happy, and some days I wake up and I'm not. You know, I think that's the same with most people. And some days I wake up and I'm fulfilled, and other days I feel like I haven't quite accomplished everything that I want to accomplish. So It goes from day to day and song to song, and you can hear songs and like, wow, this guy is living the best life. He's in love. He's got a beautiful thing going. And then you hear the next song, like, does this guy live in the gutter? I'm not sure. Which is why it's important for me to kind of take on different characters and then just kind of inject a little bit of me in the song.
Matthew also did the all the photography accompanying the record too, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He's a smart kid, and he, you know, when he gets passionate about something, he goes for it. And he finally found his thing with photography. You know, he's one of those guys that kind of searches around for different things, and he'll fall in love with fly fishing, and then 2 years later, he doesn't fly fish anymore, or he'll fall in, you know, all sorts of things. But with photography, I feel like he's found a way to accomplish what he wants to accomplish with the way that we look and he looks. He has that control now. So it's like, as a band who's taken thousands of photo shoots and stuff like that, you realize what you like about yourself and what you don't. And when he's got the camera in his hand, he can pull out the things that you do like. And I mean, even a photo when I don't look good in the photo, which is not that rare. I do understand why it's important that photo is a part of the process.
Yeah.
So he like brings out an artistic way of taking the photos, which is nice.
Plus, it's very hard to incorporate fly fishing into music, I found.
Yeah, it doesn't really play on the radio.
No, doesn't lend itself to it. Have you done something different with the guitars on this record? Because I only mention that just because it feels really atmospheric. this time around?
Yeah, we had the Edge play the guitar on all of the songs, so that kind of helped. No, I don't know. I think it's because Matthew was in a different headspace. He wasn't really guitar guy on this record. He wanted to do more with synthesizers and old organs and old things. So when we finally could get him to play guitar, I feel like a lot of times he was kind of playing along to the stuff that he had been doing on keys. So yeah, maybe. I mean, my guitar is the same. You never hear me play a different guitar on albums.
Yeah.
I just play my baby, and then I'll play acoustic and stuff like that. But, you know, the process of making the record did definitely have an atmospheric thing to it.
And listen, I've got friends, you know, they can barely get through a Christmas with their family. You are in a band with yours. Do you think that has made the experience tougher or easier? I guess, you know, 8 studio records and you've still got the original ensemble, so something must be working.
Yeah, we make a point of never spending Christmas together. The older we get, we're such family dudes because we grew up, like, our family reunion was a huge thing. I mean, I can remember being a young man, the coolest people in the world were my uncles. And now looking back, they weren't really doing anything that special. It's just like, that's the family we grew up in, you know. We look up to the older generation, and that has spilled over into what we do now, you know. Now that we all have kids, we can't wait to get together so we can see each other's kids. You know, we want to be that inspiration to them that our uncles were to us. So yeah, family is a huge thing to us. And we're fine to the point now where we're all somewhat mature enough to where we don't fuck it up. You know, when we get together, we appreciate the time together. When we're working, we aren't brothers and cousins. Like, we're in there working. Whenever we're not working, we are 100% just best friends and family, and try our best to be that way, at least in front of the kids.
Unreal. Caleb Follow, Will, man, thank you so much for hanging out, giving us an insight into the new record, When You See Yourself. It is well worth your time. I've been with you guys since the start, you know, the Bucket and California Waiting, all that sort of gear. Great to see Kings of Leon still kicking goals, man. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. I appreciate you sticking with us.